So here we are. This is the second lecture, chapter one on the economic problem. Now, what is the economic problem? The economic problem that all economics revolves around is that we live in a world of scarce resources. And yet people have unlimited wants and needs. So how do we meet their needs in this world of scarcity? So we live in a world of scarce. Now, in economics, as we learned last time, what does scarce mean? Scarce does not mean rare or hard to come by. Scarce means that there is not enough for everyone who wants it for free. That's what scarce means. So, everything that has a price is, by definition, scarce. Otherwise, it wouldn't have a price. Otherwise, it would be a free good. See, what is the purpose of the price mechanism? The purpose of the price mechanism is for society to decide who gets and who doesn't get when there's not enough for everyone for free. Now, who gets? Well, those who get when things are scarce are those who have the money and who want it the most. If you've got the money and you want it more than other people, then you get. If you don't have the money or you don't want it as much, you know, you can have the money, but maybe you don't want it. Then you don't get. So it's the role of prices that helps us with what is called the allocation problem. See, we have the economic problem, but the allocation problem is, oh, because we have an economic problem, how do we decide who gets what and how much? And that's what's called the allocation problem. How do we allocate society's goods and services? And what we're going to learn in this course is primarily how a free market answers this question. So we live in a world of scarce resources. Now, what are resources? Well, we talked about three of them last time. I'm going to talk about the fourth one today. But the four resources is land. Anything from the earth is called a land resource. Labor. Now, when we say labor, we mean labor that is directed labor. It's energy, it's effort that is attempting to solve the economic problem. That's what we mean by labor. And capital are those tools and machines, buildings, you know, factories that are used in the productive process to try to solve the economic problem. That's what we mean by capital. Now, while I'm at it, I didn't mention this last time, but see, a free enterprise system is a capitalistic type system. But in order for a free enterprise system to work, we need the buildup of capital. Now, we don't have that very much in the United States any longer. You know, there used to be a time when we had lots of production in America, and we sold these goods to other countries. You know, we had factories that produced things. But we don't have that so much anymore. I mean, when you go to buy things at Walmart and other you know, department stores, I mean, where's a lot? I mean, how much of that merchandise, like clothes and other things that you buy, is actually manufactured in America? Yeah, now it's China and you know, and other countries. Now, you might even have an American company, like Apple is an American company, right? And iPhone is their number one seller. Are iPhones manufactured in the United States? No, they're not. See, you can have an American company that manufactures in other countries. See, we don't have manufacturing. Now, you can't, see, what I'm saying is that if you have an economic system where someone gets paid, you know, to cut someone else's hair, and then the barber goes to the grocery store and buys groceries, and then they, you know, and then the grocer uses you know, his income to pay his rent. You can't build a successful economy like that. That, you know, that is a system that stagnates, and that's what we've got in America. In order to have growth, you need the buildup of capital. But we don't have that in the United States. And that's why that's one reason why we're just treading water economically. Okay? In a capitalistic system, you need the buildup of capital. And we don't have that in America. So I wanted to make that point about capital before we went on. But anyway, entrepreneurship is a managerial and organizational skills combined with the willingness to take risks. Now, what is the alternative to a free market system that depends on entrepreneurship? The only alternative is a centralized system. I mean, either the state makes decisions to decide what to produce and who gets what and how much, or the free market decides. Basically, now you can have versions of both in the same system, you see. But overall, what I'm talking here about is the entrepreneur plays a role in a free market system. The entrepreneur does not play a role in a command type system. In fact, you know, under the Soviet Union. You know, before the Soviet Union imploded and no longer exists as it did, it was against the law to be an entrepreneur. I mean, in some cases, it was a penalty by death if you were an entrepreneur. Why? Because in a command system, the entrepreneur is a threat to the system. The entrepreneur is competition to the centralized power, and centralized power does not tolerate competition. So it was actually against the law to be an entrepreneur in the Soviet Union, as well as any other centralized, like North Korea. You know, there's no entrepreneurs in North Korea. Again, you know, when you have a centralized power, then that power does not tolerate competition. So when we're talking about entrepreneurship, we're talking about a free market system. And the entrepreneur is a very special kind of person. Now, all entrepreneurs are business people, but not all business people are entrepreneurs. For example, you can have a president of a company, like the president of General Motors, and he's perhaps a very successful business person, but is he an entrepreneur? Well, maybe yes and maybe no, but not necessarily an entrepreneur. You know, most leaders of corporations are simply managers, but they're not really entrepreneurs. Now, you can have, I mean, take Steve Jobs, for example, with Apple Computer. I mean, now there's an entrepreneur. Or Bill Gates, you know, with Microsoft. I mean, there's a real entrepreneur. So that's what we're talking about here, entrepreneurs. Now, what are the characteristics of entrepreneurs? Well, see, what I'm going to show you is that you all, by the very fact that you're here, you're demonstrating many of the characteristics of entrepreneurs. For example, entrepreneurs have a dream. They have a vision of, you know, what they want in the future. Now, why are you here? You're here because you have some idea. You might not even crystallize exactly what it is that you want to do in the future, but you want something more than you've got, right? That's why you're here. You want something in the future that's going to be promising. I mean, you don't want to simply flip burgers at McDonald's all your life and trade hours for dollars. Now, some of you know exactly what you want. Some of you, you know, you want to be a nurse, or you want to be a doctor, or you want to be a lawyer, you know, you want to be an Indian chief. I mean, it's, you know, it's you've got, you know, a crystallized idea, but you've got a dream, and that dream propels you through life, and it propels you through all the obstacles that you're going to encounter as a college student. As long as you keep that dream before you, you'll, you know, eventually reach your goal. But, you know, the very fact that you have a dream puts you in the minority, really, in terms of the population. You know, most people don't have a dream. I mean, you know, they don't think beyond tomorrow. I mean, if they can just go to work and exchange hours for dollars and pay the rent and buy some food and go to the movies once in a while, then they're happy. But, you know, you all said, well, you know, I want more than that. So that's why you're here. Another obstacle, another characteristic of an entrepreneur is that you have learned to overcome obstacles. Now, all of you have challenges for being a student. I mean, some of it may be financial, some of it may be, you know, health issues, some of it may be family issues. But, you know, you all have different challenges, perhaps. But you know, none of you are going to go through 4 years of college without overcoming some obstacles. And that's a definite characteristic of an entrepreneur, someone who is able to overcome obstacles, to see a challenge and to have perseverance to you know, overcome. And another characteristic that, again, you all are demonstrating is that you've all learned the lesson of delayed gratification. Now, you've all got friends who said, you know, I mean, I don't want to go to college and spend all that money and, you know, for 4 or 5 years. I mean, you know, most people don't graduate in 4 years. Most people, you know, I mean, it took me 5 years to graduate from undergrad, and that's pretty common. And I don't want to spend a lot of money and go for 5 years, you know, without making any money. And at the end of 5 years, I might not even get a job anyway. And so I just want to go and get a job right now and make money right away. Well, see, that person that, you know, goes to a job right away hasn't learned the lesson of delayed gratification. See, but you all said, well, yeah, you know, I'm going to spend this money and I'm going to, you know, spend this time because the rewards, I know in my heart of hearts that the rewards are going to be, it's going to be worth it in the future. See, but not all people are like that. Again, you know, you're a minority in terms of the population. You're a special group, a very special group. You've learned the lesson of delayed gratification, or you would not be here. You're also a risk taker. See, is there any? You could go 4 years or 5 years to college and spend thousands and thousands of dollars, but is there any guarantee that all of that money and work will get you a job? No. But you said yourself, there's no guarantee that all this is really going to benefit me, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm willing to take that risk. If you weren't willing to take a risk, you wouldn't be here. And that's a very admirable trait. Anyone who's ever succeeded at anything has been willing to take a risk. Risk is an essential ingredient to success. Now, strives to be unimportant. Now, here's something that, what we're really talking about here, this may take some explanation, but what we're really talking about here is, I'm assuming that as an entrepreneur, you want to be in a position of control over your own destiny. That you want to do what you want to do, when you want to do it, and whom you want to do it with. See, one of the advantages of getting an education and becoming a professional, you know, one thing or another, is that you have more choices. You know, with only high school education, your choices are very limited. But with a good college degree and perhaps some good experience, like through internships and things like that, well, you've got many more choices. Okay, so what I'm saying here is that one of the characteristics of entrepreneurs, I'm assuming, although this may not always be true, but I'm assuming that You want personal freedom. You want to do what you want to do, when you want to do it, and whom you want to do it with. Now, this is where an entrepreneur like this wants to be unimportant. Why is that an ingredient to personal freedom? You see, let's say you own a business. You're a business person. You may even be an entrepreneur. You are consider yourself very important to the business. And you have arranged things whereby the business can only function well if you're there personally. Now, you might have the gratification of, you know, owning your own business, and that's great. And you might even have the great satisfaction of perhaps, you know, earning a lot of money. But do you have personal freedom? Can you leave for 6 months, and can your income keep coming in just that, like if you were there? Well, no, because you know you have considered yourself important to the business. Now, what happens if you own a business but you hire people perhaps that are smarter than you, more talented than you, and you purposely arrange the business where it's going to run without you just as good as if you were there? In other words, you have tried to be unimportant to the running of the business. Now, if you have a business that's generating an income week after week, month after month, year after year, and you're unimportant, then that means you can go and do what you want to do, when you don't want to do it, and whom you want to do it with, right? You can go to Europe for a whole year. You know, you can travel. You can take cruises. You can do this. You can do that. And your income keeps on coming in. Why? Because you were unimportant to the business. Duplication. The source of all wealth building. I mean, if you ask me, you know, what is the source of all wealth building? Now, when we say wealth building, what are we talking about? We're talking about personal freedom. What is money after all? Well, money is simply the ability to make choices, right? The more money you have, the more choices you can make. The way to have that kind of personal freedom is through the process of duplication. Let's say that you own a factory and you have 100 employees. If you have 100 employees, can you pay your employees what they're worth? And the answer is no, you can't. Why? Well, if you paid your employees what they were worth, now what are they worth? Well, if they can manufacture something that has a market value of $200, that you go out to market and you can make a profit of $200, and you pay that employee $200, then you're paying the employee what they're worth. But why can't you do that? Well, you can't do that because what's in it for you? Right? I mean, are you in business? I mean, your motivation is to make a profit, correct? So you cannot pay your employees what they're worth. The only way to make a profit is to pay your employees less than what they're worth. So let's say you've got 100 employees. And let's say that you pay them, I don't know, let's say, you know, $20 an hour. When you pay them $20 an hour, that $20 might be their salary. It might be insurance. It might be in the form of, retirement benefits. But if they're worth $20 an hour, you can't pay them $20 an hour, correct? So let's say you pay them $15 an hour. That $15 an hour covers their wage and insurance and retirement and things like that. For every hour they work, you get 25% of that hour in this example, right? See, a part of their workday goes to you. So you are duplicating yourself through your employees. See, it's just like you were there working, manufacturing something that has a value. We can sell this product in the market, you know, make a profit. It's just like you were working, but you're not having to be there physically. Now, see, when you have a job, you're simply trading hours for dollars. So many hours, so many dollars. Now, what is your limitation if you have a job? Well, your limitation is a 24-hour day. If you're trading hours for dollars, Well, you can only there's only 24 hours in a single day, so there's a limit to how much money you can make. But if you have 100 employees and they're working 8 hours a day, and let's say 7 of those hours, the money generated goes to them, but 1 of the hours, the money they generate, goes to you. If you have 100 employees, how many working hours are there in a day for you? 100 hours. That's just like you work physically 100 hours in a 24-hour day. If you have 1,000 employees and again they work 8 hours a day and they get to keep everything that can be generated, income that can be generated in the first 7 hours, but you know the 8th hour goes to you. If you have 1,000 employees, how many working hours are there in a day for you? 1,000. That is the key of wealth building. The key of wealth building is to duplicate yourself through other people. And the more you can duplicate yourself, see, not only can you make more money this way, but you also can attain personal freedom. Because if you're duplicating yourself through other people, then you don't have to be there physically, which means that you can go elsewhere and do what you want to do, which is personal freedom. It also gives you more security. See, if you have a job, let's say you've got a great job and you're making a couple $100,000 a year, but if something happens to you, like maybe you're an athlete, you're making maybe $1 million a year, a great athlete, maybe a football player, but if you get injured, are they going to continue paying you the same $1 million a year? No. You can make a lot of money, but your income is still based on your ability to perform. But if you are making your money through the process of duplication, then you've got more security, because even if you get hurt, I mean, even if you spend a year in the hospital, your income still keeps coming in because your employees are still going to work. I mean, if you go take a vacation in Europe for a year, your employee is going to say, oh, well, now, you know, he or she is gone, and, you know, let's just take off the time ourselves. Well, no. They're going to keep on working. They may not even know you're gone. You see what I mean? But if you've got a company that's generating an income through the process of duplication, then even if you die, your family still can reap the rewards of that business. So when you duplicate yourself, you can make more money, have more free time, and have more security than anyone who's simply trading hours for dollars on a job. One of the most undesirable ways to duplicate yourself is through employees. What's the problem with duplicating yourself through employees? Well, you've got all kinds of problems, you know. I mean, people aren't perfect, and, you know, they may not have the best work ethic, or they may not, you know, be around all the time, or, you know, you've got, government regulations to contend with, and there's a lot of headaches with employees. But how about if you put your money in apartments? How about if you had a hundred apartments? When those people pay rent, what do they have to do? They have to work somewhere, correct? They got to have a job. So a little bit of what they make in a day, right? A little bit goes to you in the form of rent. So you are duplicating yourself through your renters. But now this is a lot better than employees, although there are still headaches with rental property. You know, you don't have employee issues. You don't have government regulations and taxes and all of this and all of that. So, duplicating yourself through renters is a better way to duplicate yourself. Or maybe the best way in normal times would be, now I say normal times because interest rates are so low today that, you know, interest rates are only low because the monetary authorities have kept them low. They would not be this low in a free market. See, we don't have a free market in terms of banking. It's a controlled market. In a free market, interest rates would be a lot higher. So how about if interest rates were determined by the market, and you could get maybe 8 or 9% on your savings. So you put your money in the bank. Now, this is a sweet deal, especially if you build up your savings, because your bank takes your money, they lend it out to people. Now, what do those people have to do to pay the bank back? They have to work. So a part of what they earn, I mean, it goes to the bank, but then the bank pays you. Now, what happens if the bank lends out all your money to, you know, different people, and those people don't pay the bank back? Does the bank come to you and say, oh, well, look, you know, we took your money, we lent it out, but they didn't pay us, so we can't pay you? No, the bank pays you your interest anyway, right? Unless you have a bail-in, right, where a bank will confiscate saver's money. But, other than that, you know, the bank pays you. Well, now notice here that you're duplicating yourself through other people, but you don't know who those people are. You don't have to worry about having employees, taxes, government regulations, none of that. You don't have to worry about them defaulting on their loans, none of that. You just put your money in the bank, and the bank sends you a check every month. And that's a sweet deal. But it's still duplication. The point I'm making is that there are many ways to duplicate yourself. Why am I videoing this lecture? And why am I making an audio file, you know, MP3 file of this lecture? Because what are those videos and what are those MP3 files? See, I'm duplicating myself, right? See, I'm duplicating myself through the technology, which means that I can accomplish a lot more with a whole lot less effort, to tell you the truth. See, it's a thought process. It's an attitude. It's not just making money. I mean, it's not into making money. It's personal freedom. But that personal freedom can only come through the process of duplication. Okay, well, let's see. How can you can duplicate yourself? Employees, rental property, savings in the bank, owning shares of stock. Same thing. You know, again, duplication. Why is duplication the flip side of debt? See, life is either an adding to or a taking away. Growth is either adding to, not growing is taken away. Growth is not an option. It's a necessity. Why? Because things deteriorate. We live in a physical world, and in this physical world, things wear out. So if we don't replace what we have today, do we have tomorrow what we have today? No, we don't. We have less tomorrow than we have today. Why? Because things wear out. Time is a cruel taskmaster. So the point I'm making is that either we're growing or we're dying. Either we're going forward or we're going backward, but we don't stand still. So life is either an adding to, like the buildup of capital, in order for us to have a healthy, growing economy, in order for us to have jobs that are, you know, good paying jobs, we have to build up capital. Machines, tools, factories, new businesses, that's building up of capital. But the flip side of that is debt. See, growth, build up of capital and growth is a positive thing, but when you go into debt, then that's a takeaway. Okay, debt is negative, growth is positive. And one or two basic laws of entrepreneurship. Now, this is kind of interesting. The first law is, whatever you have, you will be given more, and what you do not have will be taken away. Now, does that sound like a riddle? Whatever you have, you'll be given more, and whatever you don't have will be taken away. Now, let me give you an example, because all of you really know this. But you don't know you know it. Let me give you an example. And this is economics, right? It's not a philosophy class. You want to buy a new car. So you go shopping. And you find the car that you want. It's $25,000. And you've got $25,000 in your checking account. So you write a check out for $25,000. Now, how much did that car cost you? Or what was the price? I shouldn't use the word cost. That's a business term. But what is the price of that car? $25,000, correct? If you have when you had that $25,000, you put it in the bank, what did the bank do? Normally, they would pay you interest. Now, if you talk about Japan and Europe, you know, where they got negative interest rates, again, you know, we live in this crazy world. Normally, I mean, under normal conditions, I mean, even in America now, you get a little bit of interest. You put your money in the bank pays you interest. Why did the bank pay you interest? Because you had money. You went to the, you bought a car, $25,000. You had your money in the bank gave you money. See, the bank gave you money because you had money. Now, let's say you want to go buy a car, $25,000. You don't have $25,000. What do? You borrow the money. Now, if you take interest, let's say you finance it over 3 to 5 years, that $25,000 car may cost you $30,000 in interest. Now, why did you have to pay money? I mean, not only the $25,000, but why did you have to pay the extra $5,000? You had to pay because you didn't have money. Because you didn't have the money, what was taken away from you in interest? Money. See, if you have money, what is given to you? Money. If you don't have money, what's taken away from you? Money. Now, y'all find that interesting? And the other law of entrepreneurship is whatever you give away, you keep, and whatever you keep, you lose. Whatever you give away, you keep, and whatever you keep, you lose. Now, you all know this because you're here in this college course. Is there any guarantee that you're going to get your money back? No. So you are essentially giving your money away because there's no guarantee. So you are giving away money because you're a college student. And you're also giving away time because maybe you would rather do other things than be in this lecture. Maybe you'd rather do other things than study for a test. But you say, no, I'm not going to go do that which I would rather do, but I'm going to give away my time and study for this test. Now, why did you do that? Because you knew that by giving away money and giving away time, what are you going to get in the future? Money and time. I mean, why are you here? You're here because you expect to have more money and more time, meaning free time to do what you want to do. A professional has more free time than a laborer. Well, you know, what is it that you want in the future? You want more money and more time. So what did you have to give away to get that? Money and time. Whatever it is you give away, that's what you keep. But if you've got friends that said, no, I don't want to go to college, I just want to flip burgers at McDonald's, I'm unwilling to give away money and time. Well, now, what statistically, what is their income compared to your income over your lifetime? See, their income is going to be a whole lot less. Why? Because they're unwilling to give away money and time. Y'all find this interesting? See, and all of this is that we're talking about entrepreneurship. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time.